I'll prepare to play, obviously. It was a bit of a whirlwind trip coming back from Adelaide and not knowing what I needed done, but the finger was just, yeah, too loose.
It's too loose, that finger. Too loose. Joel Selwood, the captain of the Cats, having surgery already after a dislocation went wrong in their clash against Port Adelaide on Thursday night. And he's got to get right for the game against the Magpies on Saturday night this week in the semi-finals of the AFL. I wonder what Rocket Ede thinks about that. Well, the all-time greats with us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Rocket.
Morning, Daniel. How are you, mate? Going well?
I'm very well, thank you. How's yourself? Week one of the finals. What did you make of the action across the weekend, just firstly?
It was great, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was fantastic games for things that we'd been hoping that footy would be like. Maybe the first half of the Port Geelong game wasn't like that, but the next three and a half games were fantastic. So they all tried to score, Whitey, didn't they? Which was good to see, rather than play pedestrian footy. So it was great.
They did. Did anything surprise you, before we sort of go into the specific games, but as a sort of an overall thing, did anything surprise you at all with what you saw?
No, nothing really surprised me. I suppose a couple of little things. I think Brisbane standing up physically to maybe the intimidation of Richmond, which was good. Line in the sand situation, I thought it was good. Didn't surprise me with the Dogs, but eventually their lack of height caught them out, which you would think was always going to happen. But I think with that, St Kilda were a 3-4 goal better side on the day and only wins by 3 points. So maybe some question marks on them. And I think we mentioned last week, I wasn't totally surprised by Collingwood, to be honest. I picked West Coast on the basis they were playing at home, but I thought Collingwood would do something different, which they did, and they did well. But no, there wasn't anything really that stood out, except across the last three games, that teams moved the ball quickly and tried to get the ball on. My question is, why wasn't it like that during the season, especially Collingwood? But anyway, it was good to see, good to view.
Well, take us through those conversations, Rocket, in a match committee scenario in the build-up to a game like that. And you talk about how things have been done in the home and away season. And Lee Matthews is famous for saying it's just to qualify the home and away season. Don't worry about it. It's just to qualify for a chance. When you come to the finals and it's all on the line, how often can you have those conversations or apply strategy and tactic that are slightly different to what you've done through the season, expect to get good results in a one-off sort of situation?
Yeah, I suppose you're hoping to a degree. I mean, you can tweak it. I think you're more out, now everyone knows that the speed goes up a bit, the intensity goes up, you can have less time, there's less pressure. So you don't want to be too fancy with your, if you change things. With the way AFL footy's been going, which has been static and kick mark, a fair degree, by having Mark play on a bit more, it's a bit more easy to implement. So from that change going that way has been a little bit easier. So move the ball on more quickly. But I thought there was a bit more tactics for teams used. I thought Brisbane not allowing intercept marks, having Vlosten and Grimes really having players technically accountable for them. Obviously Geary going to Daniel. Was a tactic. So there was a team tactic and there was also individual tactics, and I think I was certainly pleased to see St Kilda trying to sit on Bontempelli and Daniel. So now there's a place for that in football. I don't think we do it enough. I think we tend to back our system, which is fine. I think you've got to have a system, but the same token, if you can negate an opposition threat, I think it's going to help you win. So, I was pleased to see that. It was good to see.
So, one of the philosophies of coaching up against any opposition any given week, Rocker, is to try and, used to be anyway, try and take something away from them. Certainly focus on you, but take something away from them. Are we getting away from that because you talk about it's all about system and backing our system in as opposed to worrying about what they're going to do to us?
Yeah, I think so. I think, some coaches, a couple have said, it's 90% about us and 10% about the opposition. Well, I think it needs to be, scale that back a bit to 70-30. I think you've got to do your homework on the opposition. And I think we've mentioned here before, if they do your homework on you, I think then if you tweak something, they're not prepared for it, if you go in the same. So there's a... I certainly don't think it's 90-10, but I think, you know, we tend to back our... Well, teams back their system the way we want to play, but I think you've got to be... They mightn't let you play the way you want to play, so you've got to have plan B to a degree and be able to score goals a different way rather than a particular way. And even with West Coast, who have had their own style, you always felt that it was going to be an individual win the game. Like Elliot Yeo's won games from, you thought it was going to be either Kennedy or Darling, maybe kick goals for them, was going to get them over the line rather than the teams, or even Ryan, was going to kick two or three goals quickly, and that was going to be the difference, where they probably just played the same way. And I thought Collingwood did the homework pretty well, and I even thought Grundy in the centre bounce, I know people thought he might have been a bit apprehensive, but I thought his method in the centre bounce was quite good, where he'd run at Nat Nui, then stop, then Nat Nui, you can see, was hesitant, and he'd jump and maybe get his hand to it, but it wasn't directing the ball as well as he had in the past. So I thought as a team, they'd done the homework on some individuals as well as the group.
There's a couple of things to come out of that, what you just said then. One is about Grundy, but just in Collingwood, do you think that they moved the ball faster because it was against West Coast and it didn't enable them to set up behind the ball the way they like to? Or do you think it's something that Collingwood's been working on for a little while now? Because I sort of reflect back when we talked about this against Port Adelaide, that they did seem to want to move the ball faster against Port Adelaide. That was certainly the case against Gold Coast, that while they didn't play particularly well, there did seem to be a focus in moving the ball quickly. So I'm of the inclination that this has been a sort of a build for a while with Collingwood to try and get back to that ball movement of 2018. Or do you think it was more a specific plan against West Coast Rocket?
I think all of the above, and I think they haven't scored enough. And I thought, yeah, I think they've been building. I think they've been trying without going overboard on it. I think their mark prime percentage hasn't been too bad, actually. But I think they've been playing on and then going wider. I think there was mark play on, but more corridor focused. So, and I think, because of the opponents, because of West Coast, but I think it was like they weren't expected to win. They're against the odds. Okay, let's throw caution to the wind. It'd be interesting what they do now. Do they temper that a bit? But I think they look so much better. Like they've only kicked 12 goals, but they looked a lot more dangerous. The interesting thing for me too is they've had the same scoring shots as their average. They've just kicked more accurately. When they played West Coast last time, West Coast kicked 13 goals two, or what is it, 14 goals three, or something like that. Accuracy is just so vital. If you can score and take advantage of the action you've got, it should put so much pressure on. I think they did that early. Cox kicked it, they kicked straight. I think they six straight or seven straight at one stage, and it gave them, well, if it was four goals three or three goals four, they back in the mire a bit. So I think that's the answer to that.
It's a good point, Rocket. Josh Kay on Twitter gave some stats last night about scores from set shots in week one of the finals. The Magpies were 8 straight. The Eagles were 8-5, so they weren't too far off. Close game, funnily enough. The Saints were 6-3. The Bulldogs were 6-7. The Tigers were 5 straight. And the Lions were 3-5. And then the Power were 4-2. And the Cats, 1-8. So even like the Cats one was a disaster. They had 4 or 5 more shots, I think, than the Power, but and still had their chances. So that's absolutely right. Accuracy makes a big difference when you get your chance, particularly from a set shot position, Rocket. And there's set shots and then there's set shots, isn't there? Because we have good shots in the corridor, sort of inside sort of 35. That's a pretty much a straight up goal. If you're kicking from the boundary, like Tom Hawkins found all night on Thursday night, it's slightly more challenging, that set shot proposition.
Yeah, it is. And now, for all the stats have come into footy now, and we've got one for everything you do, every action you have. I think the kick inside 50, yep, and the kick between the big sticks are the most important kicks. And if they are, and if you, I don't think enough attention is paid to goal kicking. And you see some players don't have a set routine, or they play on from 35 metres or 20 metres out, kick around the corner, where they can kick a drop punt, and they miss horribly. So either they They don't even practice around the corner. I mean, if you're going to kick like that in a game from a set shot, and it's crept into the game or flooded into the game, at least practice that. So you've got a routine, so you're confident in doing it. Like Hawkins did the other night, that left foot seemed to me as if he'd never practiced it. He just played on straight away. Well, he's such a nice kick. He would have kicked a drop punt, would have kicked it easily. So you've got to be able to... You're not going to get that many chances. Defensive actions of teams are so good. The teams defend really well. If you can kick goals and you, for every time or 50% of the time you go inside 50, it's gold. And that's what teams, I think, have lost a little bit of their art and lost a little bit of focus on.
When you talk about the inside 50 kick and the set shot kick being important, I mean, that's what destroyed the Bulldogs. Time and time again, their kick inside 50 was poor. And then their goal kicking, Lockie Hunter just before three-quarter time and three or four crucial shots in the last quarter, they didn't take any of those chances. And, St Kilda were too good. Just on Brody Grundy, sitting on the bench in that last 70 seconds. Now, Nathan Buckley has explained why that was the case and has said categorically that Brody Grundy is 100% fit. I'm still not 100% sure about that, but are you comfortable with that tactic?
That they in the last 30 seconds?
Yeah.
Sometimes you just get caught, sometimes, but like he's their best ruckman, but he explained what he was saying, that Cameron was in better form than him. So at the start of the third and the start of the fourth, he had Cameron on. And he was saying that he was able to modify on the run, which I think is good coaching. I think if you've got a plan and you can see there's an alternative that's better at the time, or it sticks out, well, you need to be able to alter that and change that. So, it's an interesting one, but you can say it worked. The Cameron was okay. I thought their tactic of having the two ruckmen, because Cox is really not a ruckman, is he? So that gives you he's your key forward. And playing the two ruckman, which can work. So I thought they did well with it.
I'll throw this to both of you. Is Brody Grundy, is he just cooked because of the amount of games in succession? I know they're shorter games, but he's someone that pretty much rucks all the time. He looks a tired man. And we're talking about one of the highest paid players in the competition, an All-Australian ruckman who hasn't reached the heights this year of previous years. Is that the issue, or have you sort of either of you worked out why he's not the player he was this year?
It's a good question. I think we've been saying, or media have been saying this for 6 weeks, maybe even longer, about is he carrying an injury, because he wasn't reaching the heights that he has the last two seasons. Yeah, we can speculate. I don't know. He doesn't seem to be carrying an injury because he seems to be running the same. He hasn't missed a game. Whether he's fatigued, whether he is carrying a minor injury and it's it's exacerbated as he keeps playing. But he's had the week off now. The other thing, playing against Nat Nui is just a different action. To me, I was interested to see how Grundy would play it. And even though he's a terrific player, I think if he went in the attitude of trying to make a nil or draw, and I think he did, I don't think he achieved that, but I think he went in with that attitude, and I think that helped. I think he was prepared to sacrifice his game, and Cameron was the backup as well, that he's not going to be fatigued by the end of the game. So to answer your question, I'm not too sure. I don't know if he's carrying an injury. He has looked fatigued, only because we think that he hasn't reached the heights of the previous 2 years.
69 games in a row for Brody Grundy in the last three seasons to this point in time. A busy man, as you say, carries the load more often than not by himself through the journey. He got some assistance. Part of me thinks that they just tried to exploit Oscar Allen as the second stringer rocket and let Brody sort of take him to school a bit around the ground. Because Nick Nat doesn't get you around the ground, so if big Darcy can come in and be a brick wall for Nick Nat, and he's got to go sideways as opposed to over the top of him with his tap work. It takes a bit of his effect away and then enables Brody Grundy to school the second stringer West Coast rucker, which was Oscar Allen, which he did. I thought it was really well planned, and they didn't need him to be up against Nick Depp because he would have been tired and bashed into him and jumped into all night long. And I don't think they could have won if that happened.
Centre clearances were 15-8 West Coast way.
Yep, and they kicked a goal from the second, third and fourth quarters inside the first minute. from a centre bounce clearance.
And that's, to me, with West Coast, sorry to change the topic a little bit, is that's not sustainable, I don't think, for their goal sources coming from, I think it was 29% or 30% out of the centre square.
Yeah, so five goals that they kick from the centre bounces.
Yeah, so it's not sustainable. They've done okay on that. But now they're still, I thought Nat Nui won the ruck battles, but I don't think he dominated that as he has done in some games. So therefore, you know, if we go on to West Coast, I think they need to have a look at their style. I don't think they've changed. They went to kick and catch a bit, and when they kick and catch, they kick it sideways to the boundary line. Like, I'm not too sure the purpose of that, because then they don't try and switch it and change it to try and make the ground wide. I think it played a little bit into Collingwood's hands. So I think they've got to look at their style, that it's not totally reliant on some individuals and totally not reliant on the centre square dominance.
Yeah, well, it's a good point as to what West Coast do, because they're also in an older list too, I think, and demographically in their campaign. So we'll see what they do with all of that. Just on other teams under pressure, talk about West Coast and being under pressure now with their system. Geelong's obviously come up for that conversation as well, Rocket, when they lose a final. It's always about, is their system, is their style of play good enough to compete regularly in finals, or is it just a home and away system that allows you to qualify? They lost to Port Adelaide. As I mentioned before, they had plenty of looks in that game from a forward 50 perspective, and with more accurate kicking, should have been and would have been much more able to win that game. Are you losing faith in the Cats? Do they need to do anything differently? How much pressure are they under? It's a three-part question, I suppose.
Well, go back in reverse. I think the pressure's going to be there because everybody's going to talk about it, so that'll subconsciously get into players' minds. There's no doubt about that. I think it's a different side than it has been. I think they're playing different. I think, as you said, they could have won it, but certainly been right in the mix with their kick more accurately. And you never know how that helps mentally with a group. So I think they're a little bit, not unlucky, not the right phrase, but they could have been right in the mix. I think it was more some individuals. I think they had three or four players that really battled at that level, to be honest, who really struggled, made turnovers, made some bad mistakes, and their system didn't cover for them, and especially down back. So I think it was that and missing goals that they should have been. So I think their system's okay. I think they're all right. I wouldn't lose faith with them, but they'll need to answer the challenge this week. They'll need to win this week to put those questions at bay.
Do you address it with the Geelong players or not about the record in finals? Does that become a theme for Chris Scott to prove the doubters wrong, or sort of stare them down and sort of say you've got to confront your fears, all this sort of stuff, or you don't mention it at all?
It's a good question. The only people who would know what to do is Chris and the group, is to knowing what the group is like. Are they strong enough to, or are they mentally wired to be able to take that, or is that false motivation? The view, some people would think that's false motivation. No, we just need to win because it's a final. And I'm of the view, what happened in 2014 really is completely different to 2020, even though it builds up and it's a different side. So personally, the way my view is, why they're looking at their group, I don't think you need to mention it. I think it's a final's a final. No, we need to win because we've deserved it. We've finished top four for a reason. We could have won. Now, the learnings out of last week, this is what we need to do. Collingwood are a great side. We've got a tough game, et cetera, on those lines. I don't think we need to prove the doubt is wrong. If we do it our way and the way we've been going about it, do our homework on the opposition, the result will look after itself, and therefore the naysayers will be looked after as well. No, I wouldn't make too big a deal of it, to be honest.
Because half this conversation was had this time last year. They lost their qualifying final, Geelong, and then came back and beat West Coast, but the pressure was all the, and the commentary was all about Geelong. You know, are they going to go out in straight sets again? Can they do this? Can they do that? Are they going to be strong enough mentally? And they beat West Coast relatively comfortably, and then obviously led Richmond, you know, comfortably at half time in the preliminary finals. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know what you think, Harf, but I'm inclined to think they just got beaten by a better team. I don't think it was a choking type of performance from Geelong that they were just beaten. Now, I still think they need to move the ball quicker. That's my personal view, to play to their strengths a little bit more. But Port Adelaide are a good team. They finished on top for a reason, and they just weren't good enough on Port Adelaide's home ground to be able to beat them.
Yep, no, I think so too. They're just beaten by a better team. And yet sometimes that happens, and that's okay. But you've got to be able to pick yourself up, because the momentum seemingly is more with Collingwood than it is with Geelong.
Yes.
From a perception
I was going to say, so this is what I wanted to sort of say. Momentum can be built by talk in the media through the week about teams. Now, I think it's been overblown, Collingwood's win against West Coast, that it's one of the great famous victories of all time and all that sort of stuff. It was an excellent win.
Tony Shaw said it's best in 40 years.
I know that. And he's a Collingwood legend, so you've got to absolutely take what he says seriously. But West Coast were a bit underdone in that game, and Collingwood got them at a good time. But what has happened is that there's been this amazing positivity build through Collingwood's performance that he's almost taking them into this week with momentum, whereas there is negative talk about Geelong. Now, this is all outside the footy club, so I'm interested to both of you. How much of that seeps in? And how much of it is completely ignored? Because the narrative going into this game is that all the momentum is with Collingwood and Geelong's up against it. And I'm not sure that's actually right.
No, I think you're right about Geelong. I think they've lost, and they lost last year to West Coast because they'd just beaten by a better team. And they were in the game. So I don't think it's something's broken at the moment. But they need to lift. They need to identify some areas. It's marvellous, and you're talking about emotion here. How much you tap into the emotion and the emotional feelings of the group and the heart and the, I suppose, the old days of the Barassi and talk and the motivational speak and all that sort of thing, and grabs the individuals. I think Collingwood and Nathan's got to find the trick of keeping the momentum going and keep that positivity without focusing on it as in that's why we win. Well, that'll be part of the recipe, but it's going to be us as individuals, and that's the way people coach today. So I don't think Collingwood will be the main front and centre is emotion, but it'll be part of it, 10%. And I think Chris will be more pragmatic and say, we will win because of ABC. We'll do our homework in Collingwood. They'll have a bit of momentum. Maybe mention that, the world's with them at this time. Now they've got momentum. People are on our backs, but we are good enough. Maybe give it a slight mention, but I don't think mention the finals record. I think there'll be a little bit of a tap-in, but you've got to keep the guys focused about what their roles are and the way they need to play.
If you're Chris Scott, Whitey, if I was Chris Scott, I'd be saying exactly what you said before. We just got beat by a better team. We had our chances. We didn't take them. We played pretty well. We're a pretty good team. And they've got to come at us and be absolutely at their best, and we've got to be off. For this to go pear-shaped, let's back ourselves in. We've got to this point for a reason, and in a system that we trust and believe in, let's go out and do it. That sort of stuff. That's what I'd be saying if I was Chris Scott, or roundabout terms. Just under the qualifying final losers, they're 32-8 the following week in the semis under the current format. So the ability to bounce back is fairly strong. And the top four is more often than not rocket a step above the bottom four in the top eight seasons, top eight finals line up in the recent years.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to mention, that history proves that the team that the top four lose the first week win the next week. And it's a 75% chance, isn't it? 75% record. So I would think both those teams would be favourite this week, but it's always media-wise, except St Kilda this week, but most of the emotion from media-wise goes with the winners from the previous week. They've got momentum, but generally the team from the top four are there for a reason. They win the next week.
You mentioned the Saints there. They took care of the Bulldogs and take on the Tigers on Friday night. Tom Lynch will come back for the Tigers. I'll get to that shortly. But just on the Bulldogs, Rocket, Luke Beveridge after the game spoke very openly about the need for change at the Western Bulldogs, about personnel and there's going to be a big turnover and all that sort of stuff. He put that on the table straight away. Have they got these sort of semi-rebuild wrong with the players they've targeted and what they've brought into the club in recent years?
It's interesting it says that because I think a lot of Bulldog supporters have mentioned all year and maybe even some media about their lack of height, selection at selection table, certain players not playing and certain players that do play are consistently playing. And we're talking about here, we're probably critical of the Bulldogs, but they lose by 3 points after not playing well and having some real deficiencies in their team, which is obviously ruck is one, and tall defender is another, which has caught them out for a while. They've got away with it, but with good tall forwards and a ruckman that can go forward, they really were exposed. So, yeah, they need to get their balance right. They, like, obviously going to pick out young Jamara at their first pick as a tall, but they've got a lot of mids. They don't really need to go with mids again. So if they keep picking mids, there's only so many spots in the team they can play. So if they haven't got a crumbing forward, they haven't got a guy with speed, they're not super quick at either end of the ground, their midfield's really strong. They haven't got a real good tall defender, because Keith, to me, is an interceptor. He was an interceptor at Adelaide. So he's your third tall, but he's playing number one tall. So he can't intercept. So he's playing on a really good player. So they need to have a tall defender so that allows Keith then, by extension, to become a far better player. And they can't quite get their tall forwards right. Like Norton came back injured, and he's going to be a really good player, but they probably need someone to support him.
And this is the big issue with the Bulldogs. It's really clear. I mean, the Josh Bruce recruitment hasn't worked for them. He kicked, in the end, 14 goals from 17 games as a key forward, and he kicked six in one of those matches. So really, it's eight goals in 16 games. And even Norton, now he didn't play as many games, Luke Norton. He only played 13 for the year, but he kicked 15 goals in 13 games and kicked six in one game, which means he had 12 games where only kicked 9 goals. For your key forwards, considering the midfield supply that they get, it's just not acceptable.
No, it's not enough. And Norton has got that potential, and which is a dangerous word, but he doesn't, at this stage, hasn't done it consistently enough. He shows signs in, for a quarter or half a quarter, takes a few contested marks, might kick a goal, but needs to... Now, whether that's the delivery and they do muck around with a bit with hands, or they kick it up the chimney, which they did on Saturday, didn't they? As you said, their entries inside 50 were just bombing the ball, so it allowed the crowd to get there and be able to spoil, so it didn't give their forwards much of an opportunity. But my point there is they're not a very quick forward line either. So the ball hits the deck. There's no one there really to be able to crumb the footy. So they need us. Now, I know they're trying to get Kavara and a few others, but they need... And Waitman is only a kid, so hopefully he can get better and play that sort of role. But they haven't got anyone with some speed on the ground level for ground balls in the forward line. So they've got some tinkering or some different parts that they need to rebuild. Now, you don't throw the baby out by the bathwater. He's going to keep his style. But I think at either end of the ground, they certainly need some different players to come in. And it's not that easy to trade. Like they've got some players in. St Kilda got it right with their trades. The Bulldogs, well, did they make over the last 2 years? Have they made a big difference? Probably not.
Probably not. What about one of the trades that's made a big difference for the Tigers as Tom Lynch, he comes back in? The Saints will have to make 3 forced changes at this stage before they appeal the Ben Long suspension last night, 1 week for his bump on Jack McRae. So it's Long, Ryder and Carlisle at the moment. Rocket and Lynch comes back in for the Tigers. Is it a bridge too far for the Saints this week after a fantastic performance to this point?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think straight up. I think the loss for the Tigers. I wouldn't be putting them out of the equation. Gee, I would think Port would be positive, Brisbane would be positive, and I reckon Richmond will be positive. And it's interesting that they're playing at Metricon, which is their request, because they live across the road and it's close to, but it's a 2.5-hour bus ride for St Kilda, because they're on the Sunshine Coast. So it's a long bus ride, 2.5 hours. So with those 3 players out here and Lynch back, I think just the equation. I know there's been marvellous behind, you know, back to the walls win, and would be if St Kilda get up. But I think the Tigers really, I think, should have an easy win, to be honest. As long as their players don't believe that. As long as their players believe that that's the psychology here, that they don't think they've just got to turn up and win. Because it's interesting, some of the media commentators are calling them arrogant at the moment. The arrogance of them on the weekend, when they're 50-metre penalties and a whole range of different things. But I just think they'll get the job done, and then they go to Adelaide, which will be a great game.
Which means we'll talk about them more next Tuesday, Rocket, getting ready for a prelim, if that is the case. We appreciate your time, as always, and your insight. Look forward to spending some time with you next week. Thank you.
Thanks, boys. Have a good week.